Welcome back to the D-Fly and Bixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst, and my old buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Plan Dixie. Let's get it. Fear the turtle. Congrats to the Terps. It hurts me a little to say that, but I feel like they were so good this season and have been for the last few seasons, and our teams really been competitive against them, that it's changed a little bit my rivalry hatred for, like, our, you know, Hopkins arch rival Maryland is a lot of respect. The respect part of the rivalry is really showing up lately, and I gotta give my respects to the Terrapins. What a season they had.
Right there with you, and I've been covering them in depth now for 7 years with the Big Ten Network. And you just have to tip your cap to them, the job that they did. And we interviewed several Terps this year post-game for some of the Big Ten games that we had. And they were very generic. And what I mean by that is they didn't really demonstrate a whole lot of personality. It was just very business-like in the post-game. And I understand you just got done a game. You don't want to say anything that'll become bulletin board material, but you're starting to think like this team doesn't have any personalities. So this weekend doing radio for Westwood One, last Friday, we had the opportunity to, that's media day. And all the players that we talked to were great, from Rutgers, from Cornell, from Maryland, and from Princeton. Great kids and just, you know, great personalities. But Maryland in particular, like, it was really cool to meet Brett Makar, like, just a really articulate, passionate guy. Luke Wehrman, who we interviewed during the regular season, very articulate and gregarious. Now, Logan Wisnowskis, he didn't smile. And we asked him, we're like, what's it going to take to make you smile? And he said, if things go the way that I want them to, I'll be smiling 4 o'clock on Monday. So it was a great answer. But then we asked Logan for a picture afterwards, and he smiled. And he actually, you know, his father, Trent, is from Catonsville, where I'm from. And I knew Trent, didn't know him well, but so we were joking, we were laughing about some Catonsville stuff. Like, you know, I had my St. Mark's Lacrosse Club hat on, where I played youth lacrosse. And then he made a joke about Jennings and the bean soup at Jennings. So it was funny. And then on Sunday, had the opportunity to interview Logan McNaney. And that kid's funny. I mean, yeah. Here he is coming off of a 19 save performance and about to play again in the national championship game. And he was very positive, very upbeat. So those are the types of interactions that are really cool.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but when the last won the championship, they had two like all-time characters on their team, and Rambo and Peacock, who were dominant personalities. So everything might seem a little vanilla compared to those two guys.
And Coach Tillman has said that when you ask about Logan, and he's like, you know, gosh, if he was on the team with Rambo and Peacock, there might not be enough room in the air or air in the room for Logan. But I think Wisnowskis, personality wise, was much more similar to Jared Bernhardt, you know, very businesslike. Actually, Jared wasn't even made available to the media last year, or he didn't want to be made available to the media last year until, you know, afterwards, after he had won the Touraton. But, you know, probably would have spoken to the media, you know, after the championships. But you know, look, it was a good weekend. I don't think the championship will or should ever go back to Hartford, Connecticut. The people were great, but it's in Rensselaer Fields in the middle of nowhere, and Hartford, no offense, nice people, but. So we stayed at a hotel called the Windsor Marriott Airport, nowhere you could walk. And even the people that though were downtown at the downtown Marriott, they're like, yeah, you know, downtown Hartford, it's okay. It's not great. It's just not a great place to have it. compared to Philadelphia, when you can stay in Center City and you can walk anywhere and everywhere. You know, even Foxborough, as nice as the folks are and as nice as Gillette Stadium is, you really, there's no city, really, unless you stay in Boston.
Yeah.
And then you're pretty far from right. Gillette Stadium.
I mean, so, in Baltimore, say you can walk from the Inner Harbor to the stadium.
Right, but Baltimore has not bid on it. That's the big thing. And everybody keeps saying Baltimore, Baltimore, Baltimore. Baltimore has not bid on the championship weekend since 2014.
I understand that, but that's the memory that people have.
Of course.
Of being in a big stadium, you know, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Boston. And it's it doesn't seem like Hartford measured up.
No. And a lot of folks were tweeting out Annapolis, which I'm not opposed to. I think Navy Marine Corps would be a great place for it. I think people were really unfair. Like, there were some people tweeting out on Saturday when we had the weather delay, you know, oh, it's bright and sunny here in Annapolis, yeah, or it's whatever. Bright and sunny here in Philadelphia.
Hey, listen, I love those comments.
You can't control Mother Nature. Do you think the people in Hartford wanted a 3.5 hour weather delay? No, they didn't. But I just feel like Hartford, okay, we did it for 2 years there. If you want to move it to a smaller stadium, let's go to Hofstra. Let's go to the Naval Academy. You know, let's go somewhere where there's a hub, you know, and a city attached to it. Now, look, I know, you know, Hempstead, New York isn't the metropolis, but you got incredible delis. You got Vincent's Clam Bar. You know, you have all these other things. On Sunday night after Dave Ryan and I did the Division II, Division III championship games, I was like, I have to get Frank Pepe's pizza. Have to. And there was one in West Hartford. It sucked compared to New Haven. And then I texted Andy Shea and I was like, oh, just so disappointed. He goes, yeah, you know, they franchised it out. Nothing beats the original. All you had to do was come 45 minutes and blah. I was like, yeah, but we're tired. We're lazy. We're beaten down. You know, we just want, and I mean, it was okay. I shouldn't say it sucked, but it was not Frank Pepe.
Yeah. Pizza. 45 minutes for pizza is pretty far too.
Right.
Yeah. When you can, you're used to getting it 5 minutes from you. Yeah. So I have a couple questions. We'll start with the Terps. Some things that came out in the post-game press conference that Tillman said, you know, I read through his comments and listened to it. Two things stood out to me. They kept talking about the selflessness of the team. And then the other thing was he mentioned this several times I started to get a better handle on what he meant by it. You hear a lot of times coaches talk about, you know, they lost last year, they won this year, the tears in the locker room. And he said, you know, he really felt for Cornell, what they're going through. And as an alum, you know, at Cornell, and you know, he really understands that program, you know, had some empathy for them and gave them lots of compliments. But he kept talking about what his team was going through and how this year was and going undefeated and whether there was pressure. And something really stuck out to me. He said the emotion from last year of all the COVID stuff, getting tested 8 times a week, his players, the sacrifices they made where they couldn't talk to their parents or go out home on the weekends. And I sort of had forgotten that, of how much sacrifice people made last year to play the season and to, you know, be able to have a full season and a championship, and the emotion that was spent to lose that game the way they lost it, and how they turned their focus and that and sort of put that energy into downplaying everything this year, you know, taking it one game at a time, playing a full 60 minutes, appreciating every moment that the team had together, and then having that business-like approach and trying to not maybe spend that emotional energy until they finally got the ultimate prize that they were looking for. Really, those two things, again, like the, you know, the locker room tears and the sacrifice they made, and then the selfishness of the team this year, and sort of, they kind of go hand in hand. Those are the two things that really stuck with me.
I can't disagree with you. And I think you saw the emotion after the final whistle. Brett Makar went to the stands and gave his father his jersey.
That was a cool moment.
You know, guys just, guys just on the field, the dog pile and everything. But, you know, even more so just the tears and the hugs and all that other kind of thing. Look, this was a business trip for Maryland. Not that it wasn't a business trip for the other three teams that were in Hartford this past weekend, but you just got the sense that this was a mission, you know, and this was them finishing the mission of winning a national championship. I'll tell you this too, that team physically was exhausted, and I'm sure we'll get into the game, but Roman Puglisi suffered the wrist injury. I don't know why everybody kept saying it was a shoulder, but it was wrist or, you know, hand. And that affected them because they had the 3.5 hour weather delay. And then Princeton physically beat up Maryland on Saturday night. They physically were pounding the Terps, and Maryland played a ton of defense in that game. So now all of a sudden, you know, you're down a shorty. So you've got Bubba Fairman, you've got Alex Smith, and then you've got Jake Higgins. They even moved Gepper to a short, late in that game. And you saw it after the final whistle. Obviously, Puglisi was playing left-handed, first of all, with that massive tape job. He couldn't scoop, he couldn't cradle, he couldn't pass. He could just defend. I was having trouble defending too, because what do? You push out, right? So, and then Bubba Fairman, who ran out the clock, was limping when doing so. Final whistle blows, hands the ball to the referee, and then he's trying to run down to celebrate with his teammates, and he could barely run. I mean, he was really hampered by a leg, you know, and then you look at Smith and Higgins, two guys coming off of ACLs. You know, all that they gave and all that they persevered to win that championship, it's a special feeling. And when you come so close, they were one play away last year from sending in an overtime against Virginia. And then when you live with that, you know, that's one thing we talked about with Luke Wehrman. You know, I kept saying it on broadcast all year. Like, he's got to be thinking about that shot. It's got to be motivating him. And he was like, yeah. So I think about it every day. You know, and then for him to come out and have the year that he had, the performance that he had, you know, not only championship weekend, but all season long, really special for Maryland, really special.
Yeah, no doubt. And the question of one of the all-time great teams, I don't even think that's in doubt. And I don't think even if they would have lost the game, they didn't. You know, they finished 18-0. They won the national championship. They didn't really have a close game. They didn't have an overtime game. They didn't, you know, the closest anyone got was really Cornell. And Cornell was fighting back, you know, fighting back to try to close it and make it a tighter game. So, you know, hats off to the Terps on just truly remarkable season. They go down as history as one of the all-time great teams.
Yeah.
And well-deserved. Yeah,
Maryland only had that game where they were trailing Ohio State going into their fourth quarter, and they blew the doors off of the Buckeyes in that final 15 minutes. And then, yeah, to your point, before the comeback started, it was 9-2 Maryland, you know, and they eventually outlasted. Like, everybody, you know, then hats off to my man, Russ DeLynn, who did his best Formula One impersonation getting us to the airport. But then on the shuttle to the flight, and then on our flight, we're all Maryland people for the most part. Oh my God. Some were just so obnoxious and just remind you of, you know, why sometimes you don't like a program. And that's not indicative of the Maryland lacrosse program. I can't tell you how many people this weekend stopped me to tell me how much they appreciate the job that Joe and I do. Covering their team and covering their games. But that's what people were saying on the shuttle, were a number of Cornell fans and a number of Maryland fans. And they were like, wow, if that game would have gone 5 more minutes, you know, maybe 10 more minutes, you know, you guys could have or would have won. It was Maryland people saying that. So it was pretty interesting.
Possibly. We'll never know. You know,
it doesn't matter.
Though. The games aren't 70 minutes long. They won.
I take it easy. I'm just trying to bolster your point. of, you know, yeah. Cornell came close and they were there, but you know, Maryland was the team that was holding the gold.
Yeah. You spoke about doing a great job covering the team. I want to give one shout out to Maryland SID, Josh Schmidt, who I think just did a remarkable job this season, making information available, going the extra mile, and nice job, Josh. Congrats on the championship. All right, Dix, I do want to know, what did you do during the rain delay, the weather delay?
I didn't do much of anything. I walked around a little bit. There were some, so, you know, being up in the press box, there were some rooms that had really nice leather chairs. So at one point I just went into one of the rooms and just like kind of put my feet up and just, you know, tried to take a nap. I was hanging out with Rutgers SID, Jordan Ozer, talk about an SID that does a great job. Just hanging out with Jordan a little bit. There were some guys who started a poker game. So Anish, Jason Horowitz, who is our sideline announcer, Brian Finkelstein, who's our producer, Dan Silverman was on our production as well. Mike Golick Jr. was there, and he sat down. They were playing poker using sugar packets as chips, as currency. I don't know. And I just wasn't really in the mood. You know, I was kind of, you know, I'm like, what the hell am I going to do? I was hanging out with Quint a little bit. We were talking, you know, kind of sticking to ourselves. Yeah. So I was just like walking around, just trying to make the most of it. And I was fielding a lot of texts. What's going on? When are they going to start playing again? Are they canceling? Are they this? Are they that? So, you know, again, not the greatest place to be stuck. And here's the other thing too. And I don't want to keep bagging on Hartford, but like the food sucked. Like for the second year in a row. No, in the press box for the second year in a row, it was like box lunches.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah, but box lunch. Yeah. And it was like turkey, roast beef. This, and then they switch it up daily. But like
they did box lunches.
Box lunches. Right. And then
that's
they put snacks out, you know, but it was like, and it was good. It was like oranges and apples, which is great. And then just like other, you know, crackers and cookies and that kind of thing. But the, I will say this, you know, with the late night on Saturday, they did spring for a bunch of pizzas.
They sprung for some pizza.
Yeah, there was pizza. But I will tell you this.
God bless them.
I will tell you this. So at halftime, you come out. There are the box lunches. It looked like, and that's the other thing. The press box was not packed this year. There weren't a lot of people there covering the games. The people from the that were, you know, that wear the shirts that are SIDs or administrators or whatever that are working for the NCAA, they outnumbered the media, I think, quite a bit. But there are people and these are the NCAA representatives too, or quote unquote, grabbing like two and three box lunches at a time. Then there were others like, they were like rifling through the box and like grabbing the cookies out or grabbing the chips out. I was like, are we in I know we're still in quote unquote a pandemic, but are we in like, you know, the end of days here? it's like survival.
Well, I will say I have been that guy in the NCAA shirt many times. And sometimes there's someone who can't leave their post and you say, I'll go up there and I'll get a box lunch. Well, usually it's food. You know, it's usually like a buffet. At least right. When I was in charge of it, people got up. There was a buffet of hot food options. But you'd say, I'll grab a box lunch. I'll take it down to the guy who's working the stats table or the security guard or that guy over there, the guy outside.
I don't know if that was happening, but I get your point. So
sometimes it happens. But the rifling through and pulling out like the cookie or leaving the apple, but taking out the fruit salad, like that's poor taste. You can't do that. You take a box lunch and that's what you take that whole thing. You're responsible for everything in there. You can't just pull out the chips.
I can't tell you the number of box lunches that were already open by the time like you got there. They're already open.
I don't know what they're doing up there in Connecticut.
Now my move was, so the box lunch was same every day. It was the sandwich and it was a different sandwich. And then you had a bag of chips and cookies. Listen, after the second box lunch, there's only so much chips and cookies I can eat, you know, or want. So I would just take the chips and cookies and I put them in there was like a little wicker kind of circular thing,
and
I would put them there,
right?
And it was kind of like when I moved out of my apartment when I was at Hopkins down the St. Paul Court. You take the chair that, you know, has been in your family for 20 some years and nobody wants it back, and you go and you put it in the dumpster, and then when you come back down to throw something else out, the chair is gone. It was like I put the chips and cookies down and like go use the restroom and then walk back into the booth and chips and cookies were already gone. Yeah. So it was like vultures, man. But like, and look, the people at UConn, Hartford, Connecticut, they're just doing their job, right? And they were very nice people, incredibly nice people. But when you go to Philadelphia, you get a soft, like they serve in the press box or in cheese the steaks. They serve cheesesteaks. They serve the soft pretzels. They serve, you know, it's just nice. It's a lot nicer. And I understand we're coming out of a pandemic, but I guess I just expected a little bit more this year.
One question. You said UConn. You haven't mentioned Fairfield. The big Fairfield.
Oh, yeah. I should.
Field.
I guess
I Fairfield. People asking me that. They're like, wait, the game's at UConn, but Fairfield. Why is that F on the field? Well, I think Fairfield's the host school.
Yeah. Fairfield is the host
even school. Though it was at UConn.
Right. You're right. Yeah, you're right. I don't want to sound like a prima donna. I don't want to sound like a crybaby. But I mean, when you're there for 4 days, and this is what you get, you know, it gets a little maddening after a while.
Yeah, no, this is good because people will like listening to this. And I have to say the box lunch etiquette in Connecticut really leaves a lot to be desired.
It was poor. Yeah.
All right, let's move on. This is good stuff. This is killing me. I love it. All right. The final D1 media poll came out and my notes are ha and come on. Again,
what now?
I get Maryland, Cornell, Princeton, Rutgers, and even Virginia, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. But then Notre Dame, number 6, Georgetown, number 8, Yale, number 9. Come on. Why is Notre Dame up there? I still get that. Did Georgetown, they finished 15-2, had like a number 2 seed in the tournament. I understand they got upset in a big upset by Delaware, who was really good, champion of the CAA, and a really great season for the Blue Hens. Suddenly Georgetown's no longer good. What are we doing? Like, how come Georgetown's not number 5 or number 6? I don't get that. So what are your comments on this final?
If you're 20? Asking, I put at end of year poll, I voted on it. I put Georgetown at 8. I did. They did drop. Okay. They did drop. I thought that was a significant loss. Think about how you would have treated it if it were the regular season. And I know it's very different, but you have a Georgetown team at home, lost to Delaware, and then you had teams that were still playing, right? And so my top 10, I'll give you my top 10.
All right.
Maryland, Cornell, Princeton, Rutgers, Virginia, Penn, Yale, Georgetown, Notre Dame, Richmond. Right, I had Richmond ranked 10th.
I hear you. My big beef that was the Notre Dame at number 6, and you had them about where I should put them. All right, I'm with you on that.
There's no way Notre Dame is ahead of Georgetown. Georgetown beat them head to head during this season.
Just out of curiosity, where did you have Delaware ranked?
13th.
Okay, they finished 11th.
13th. I had Brown 11, Ohio State 12. Delaware 13, Jacksonville 14, Duke 15, BU 16, Army 17, Carolina 18, Harvard 19, 20, Denver.
Okay.
And the only team that I don't want to say regret, but the only team I feel like I should have put in the top 20 was St. Joe's that I did.
Oh, yeah.
What a St. Joe's.
What a season on all kills.
Yeah.
All right, Tix, I have a question for you. I'm not going to do any kind of next year kind of thing, but I will ask you this one next year question. Who do you think will be the media number 1 team when the first poll comes out in the fall or the winter?
I can't answer that. I don't know. Because the reason I will say that is because you don't know. We have an idea sitting here in the first week of June who's coming back. But that there is going to be a lot shaking out over the next, you know, couple of months. So
could you list a few teams? Do you have like, you want to go that far?
I mean, I think Maryland is going to be back up there. Yeah. I mean, I think Georgetown is going to be back up there. I think that the Ivies, again, like, I think Penn may welcome back some quote unquote fifth years, even though it's not their fifth year, but a place like Princeton, I don't think is. Like, in other words, Eric Peters is done at Princeton.
Chris Brown is done there.
But is Sam Hanley done at Penn? We don't know that for sure.
Yeah, that's true.
And where, and if not, you know, where, if Eric Peters decides to play next year, where is he going to go? If Sam Hanley doesn't return to Penn next year and wants to play again, where is he going to go? I think we need to really, I think we really need to kind of weigh those things out. So I think it's going to be really, really difficult to ascertain, you know, kind of a top. I saw something on one of the forums or one of the chat rooms or something with a preseason top 20, 25. It's garbage. Like, okay. I mean, it's basically like, let's, Maryland, Cornell, Princeton, Rocker. Like, it's, yeah, like, dude, same team. Don't be lazy like the old lacrosse magazine was and just, you know, recycle the finish of the previous season. And yeah. I can still remember, I think it was when Virginia won the 03 title and they put them preseason number 104, or maybe it was the 06. They win the 06 championship and they give them the number one for 07 preseason. It's like, do you know how many players this team lost, for crying out loud? I mean, they lost the defenseman of the year, the wartime winner and attackman of the year. They lost the middie of the year. And, you know, I mean, you're talking like six first team All-Americans that they lost off that team. Yeah. And it was lazy. That lazy rag still put them number one in 2007. You kidding me?
All right. Well, then we'll just move on. We can talk about this at a later time when, after some transfers get moved on.
I was in a good mood before I got on this podcast. Definitely.
Well, I also thought we'd talk for 20 minutes max, and I got like at least half an hour left of stuff.
We're not even a quarter away through.
No, we are not. So let's move on. So today is Thursday. They're going to announce the Twarton Award winner tonight. This podcast will come out on Friday. So I do want to talk about these. And it's a little bit of a way to recap the season and also salute the performance of some really talented college lacrosse players who have blessed us with their talents over the last several years. So let's talk about the finalists. This year's men's finalists feature returning finalist Chris Gray from UNC. He's the all-time leading scorer, point scorer in the NCAA, and was the ACC Offensive Player of the Year. Chris Gray is joined by a number one PLL draft pick, Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year, Logan Wisnowskis from Maryland. The Ivy League Player of the Year, Sam Hanley from Penn. Patriot League Offensive Player of the Year, Brendan Nickturn from Army West Point. And Virginia's Connor Schellenberger, who was a first-team All-ACC pick this spring. Let's go through each of their resumes, and then I'm going to ask you why they should win it, and then you can tell me why they may not win it. All right? And we'll go alphabetically here. So Chris Gray, he had 48 goals, 32 assists, 80 points. You know, he's the all-time leading scorer. What's impressive about his is he really carried UNC, a young UNC team this year. The next highest point scorer was Nicky Solomon, 37 points. So it's a big, big gap there. Give me a case for why Chris Gray could win it and why he might not.
Well, the why not is easier than the you know, reasons why he would. That's, you know, North Carolina didn't make the NCAA tournament, so he didn't get those extra games. Why he would win it, everything you just mentioned, all-time NCAA points leader, 80 points, you know, despite the fact that he was, you know, really option one, option two, you know, he was the guy on offense that everybody game planned around, and even still, he was able to have 80 points.
Next up, Sam Hanley from Penn, 36 goals, 36 assists, 72 points from the midfield. He was the Quakers' leading scorer, Player of the Year in the Ivy League, led the Quakers to the Ivy League tournament championship and a quarterfinal appearance.
You know, that's an amazing season for a midfielder, and I was really impressed with him, particularly in the first round of the NCAA tournament against Richmond. He just kind of seemed indefensible. I think that would be a reason he would win it. You know, such a balanced season from a midfielder. But the reason that he wouldn't, I thought at times this year he was inconsistent. And, you know, I mean, I'll just say one of the main reasons why none of the four that are up against Logan Wisnowskis won't win it is because they're not Logan Wisnowskis.
Yeah. We'll get to him.
Yeah.
Next up, Brandon Nick Turner from Army, 41 goals, which would be great in any for any college player, but 60 assists. He led the nation in assists by 13 over the next guy. Asher Nolte had 47. And again, they didn't make the NCAA tournament, so he didn't get some extra games. Army finished 12-4, lost in the Patriot League Championship to BU, but 101 points and capping a stellar career for Nick Turner.
Incredible career. And I got to cover him on a game for CBS Sports Network against Colgate. Got to see him up close and personal. I remember him against Loyola, both games, the regular season and the Patriot League semifinal. He was the difference in that game. He's such a difference maker for Army, and that's a reason why he would win it and 101 points. Reason he won't win it, didn't make the NCAA tournament, didn't have those extra games. And he's probably the least visible of all the Tourton finalists in terms of media, television coverage. The Patriot League games typically aren't on until later in the year. When CBS, you know, really kind of gets their package in the full swing.
Fourth candidate is Connor Schellenberger from UVA. He's a sophomore, 32 goals, 44 assists.
Unbelievable player. He's the one when you look at these finalists, you kind of question, does he belong in this group? And that's no knock on Schellenberger. He just didn't have the year that he had a year ago. But when we had Christian Sweezy on recently, he said, you know, Schellenberger's a guy that even has an effect on the game when he doesn't have the ball in his stick, when he's not scoring a ton of points. So I think, you know, the reason he would win it is because he is such a dangerous player and such a balanced player. Reason he wouldn't is because he was, you know, I think a little bit more inconsistent than he was a year ago. And Virginia didn't win the national championship.
And then finally, the guy who I think is the heavy favorite to win it, Logan Wisnowskis, the fifth-year senior from Maryland, 61 goals, 42 assists, 103 points on the season. He's Maryland's all-time leading scorer. What a season. What a career for Logan Wisnowskis.
Yeah, the reason he would win it is because he's a national champion and he's the best player on the national championship team. And he had an incredible season. Reason that he wouldn't win it, I don't know. The vote gets lost or something. I don't know. Or Joe B or whomever's presenting it says the wrong name, on Thursday night. But yeah, Logan's going to win it.
On a team, we talked about his sort of low key personality and an unselfish team. Stood out. He scored 40 more points than the next leading scorer for the Terps, Keegan Conn. That's significant. He was definitely the stars on an all-time team.
And no doubt. And I covered a lot of his games this year, and I can't tell you how many times where he would get in a position to score a goal and it wouldn't have been a bad shot had he taken it. But 9 out of 10 times, a kid, you know, on any offense would take that shot and want that shot. Any offensive coordinator, any head coach would want that shot. And he would make the one more. He would make the one pass that would get to a teammate that was in an even better position to score a goal. Just incredibly unselfish and a really, really hard worker.
Well, so I'm going to go so far as to predict and congratulate Logan on the Tourton Trophy. Congratulations. If he does not win, Dix, we will record a new podcast for next week and interview the winner if we can get that.
Absolutely. On. Yeah, sure.
It's an apology.
All good. So listen, all of them are deserving. Players.
They really are.
Great players.
Yeah, and I wish them. It's been a pleasure watching them all play and wish them well. in the future. All right, Dix. I want to follow up, finish up. Again, we're the preview podcast. So we have nothing to preview. The games are finished, but I do have some mailbag questions for you that listeners have provided for us. The first question is, I'm not even sure you know the answer to this, but I must have had three different people ask me this weekend, and it is, how much does a PLL player make, like an average player, like what's the range, like what's the most money that you can make? And do you know the answer to this?
I don't. I do not know the answer. Yeah.
So I Googled it, and I've shared that with people. I said, like, why are you asking me? Like, I'm like you have one friend who knows something about lacrosse. You can just Google this. So it says around an average around 30,000 is what a player makes. They've sort of slotted the rookie salaries for rookies beginning with the 2022 college draft. There's a scale on draft picks based on your draft position. All but the top four picks receive a three-year, $25,000 contract. So if you are picked in the draft, you get a three-year contract, which is great. It gives you some security, I guess. The top four players receive, in descending order, $30,000, $28,500, $27,000, and $26,000 in that order. So let's say Logan Wisnowskis, number one pick, is going to get a three-year $30,000 per year contract. So a three-year $90,000 contract to play in the PLL. And they also get a travel stipend, some other things, to like, you know, they're compensated in different ways. So it can be a full, you know, it's not the worst job coming out of college and playing summer of college lacrosse, pro lacrosse, and making $30,000 in 4 months. So, you know, but it's probably not a long-term at this point full-time position for you to raise a family on down the road.
Yeah, not yet, but, you know, hopefully the league does get there. I'll never forget working with Matt Ward years ago with ESPN. And I remember Ward came out in 06 after winning that national championship for Virginia. I think it was the 06 MLL Rookie of the Year. And then he only stayed in the league for a couple more years after that. And just him telling me, you know, I just kind of rolled after my senior season into my rookie season of professional lacrosse. I was still in shape. I was still, you know, and then I went and worked. And what he told me, how hard it was to get into any type of shape. You know, after you're out of college, you're not an athlete anymore. You know, you're a professional. And so I think that's why guys tend to have pretty good years once they get out of school. You know, of course, they're banged up. They're going to need a little bit of time to recruit. I don't think Wisnowskis is playing this weekend. I could be wrong. But I did see some of the guys that just graduated or played in championship weekend or on the PUP list, you know, the physical and form. A guy like Puglisi is probably going to, you know, total speculation on my part, but he could be out all summer, you know, with that injury. It's hard. And it takes, I think what these PLL athletes have shown us is their dedication to the sport and the dedication to the physical fitness while still holding down other, you know, full-time employment.
Yeah. And the goal of the PLL, I think being a player in the PLL is a better financial package than any at any other time.
Oh, absolutely. Without question.
And it continues to improve. So,
and I think it's pretty stable too. I mean, you look at the sponsorships, you look at the media deals. I think the league's in a fantastic place.
All right. Next question from a listener. Kevin Connery at Michigan got off to a hot non-conference start and then went winless in Big Ten play. What do you think has to change to get Michigan a shot to move up to top two or three in the Big Ten?
I think that one's kind of easy for me. I've watched him recruit. He does a nice job, him and his staff. They get good players. I think, you know, the support is there. They got to play a better schedule. You know, that 7-0 start, I don't know what the combined record of their opponents was, but I'm going to say it was significantly, collectively below 500. You need to play a tougher schedule so when your conference play starts, you've been in a position where, you know, you needed a goal to tie a game late, or you needed to hold a team off with a lead late. all those types of game scenarios. I think we've seen it with Rutgers, the beefing up of the schedule. I think that served them well when they get to, you know, Big Ten play and then Big Ten tournament play and now NCAA tournament play. You got to take the next step with the schedule if you're Michigan.
All right. I got a couple questions from people about the transfer portal. The first one is, you know, you have sons who are one who just finished his freshman year, one who just finished his junior season of high school. How has the transfer portal affected recruiting at the college level? And the COVID year, you know, I guess that's key to work that in.
I think there's a lot of ways to answer that question, but I think the most simplest form is coaches might hold money back now of their finances, to whereas maybe you would bring in 10 guys in a class. Maybe now you're only bringing in 8 and you're saving money on the back end in case there's somebody that enters the portal or contacts you that wants to be a part of your program.
And then the second part of the, or another transfer portal question is, there seem to be a few schools in particular that are really good at getting grad transfers, Rutgers, Georgetown, Maryland. What advantages do those programs have? Or why is that? Why do they seem good at it? Is it the academic offerings that are available? I think that has something to do with it. Is it the way the rosters are turned over and it's some of its luck? Is it just that these are attractive schools currently attract? And then I know that there's some schools like Ivy League schools, Patriot League schools, where it's not even an option. Like you can play for 4 years and then they don't have a graduate program that you could even be a part of. But what is there anything in particular that makes certain schools attractive? And what's your opinion on that?
I think you kind of answered that question. There might be a particular academic program where a student athlete wants to pursue an advanced degree at, you know, maybe that school is unique to that school or that school is known for it. I think that's first and foremost. I think also maybe, you know, those schools are a little bit more aggressive at pursuing, you know, and scouring the transfer portal and bringing in transfers.
I think there's something like, let's just look at Rutgers in particular. Like, you know, they have 27 seniors. A lot of those guys are grad transfers or fifth year seniors who have sort of made there. And I think some of it is just timing. Like when the transfer portal became an option, seniors were leaving the team and they held back a little bit of money or they had money that came available and they were able to replace guys. So it's now Rutgers is 27 positions open if let's say all those guys leave.
They're not all leaving. They're
right.
Not all leaving.
Of course not. They can't. Like a lot of them will, but they'll have all these other roster spots open, is what I'm saying. So like they've created an opportunity to manage it maybe better than others. And I think I did answer my question. I think certain schools that are big institutions have a one-year master's program and attractive areas of study that allow kids to get their master's or a graduate degree or get a lot of credits towards that in the one season that they come and play.
Yeah, again, I think it's a combination of things. I think it's the program academically. I think it's the program lacrosse-wise. How open is the coach to having those kids come on board? And it'll be interesting to see if more schools follow the model of Rutgers, Maryland, Georgetown, and become more aggressive in the transfer portal.
All right. One more. Say you're the commissioner of the ACC, Jim Phillips. What are 3 schools that you're looking to poach or bring along to the ACC to give them, you know, a full complement to get an automatic qualifier?
I don't think you need to poach anybody. I think you just need to get, you know, the Virginia Tech right away off the bat should have a men's lacrosse program. That would give you your 6 right there. And then outside of that, I'd look at trying to reestablish it at a place like NC State. I mean, we've seen obviously North Carolina have so much success over the years. You would be able to attract kids to, Raleigh, right? NC State's Raleigh, I think. Yeah. So those are the two schools that jump off the page at me right away is, you know, you already have a women's program, Virginia Tech, and a men's, and then NC State.
Yeah, Boston College is another candidate.
You know, I forgot all about BC. That confuses me because I always, even though BC's in the ACC, I always still think of it as a Big East school. I do.
And I think, have you ever been to Wake Forest? You ever been on their campus?
No.
Do you know people? It's like a bigger version of Richmond, in sort of my opinion. It's the kind of school that should have a men's lacrosse program. I think it would just fit with the personality of the student body and the school. That triangle area, the mini triangle of Winston, High Point, Greensboro, is an up and coming lacrosse, an emerging lacrosse market. I think it's and there's enough just local kids there. And there's a couple of just good club lacrosse there. High school lacrosse is pretty good in that part of the state. I think Wake Forest should have a team as well. So yeah, those are good candidates. So you're saying though, you don't even have to go outside and look at other. You're saying
no, you're in. You got it right there, and you just answered the right there. Virginia Tech and or BC should be the first two targets. Should be the first targets.
There you go. All right. Thank you for your questions, everybody.
University of Miami too.
Right,
Miami's in the ACC. Miami has a team.
Yeah, that's true. Imagine if they had a team.
That's the thing, man. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, the expansion of the NCAA tournament. No, expansion as it is right now is not the answer. Expansion of the number of Division I men's lacrosse teams that are playing, that are sanctioned, that are recognized. That is what we need in the sport.
Agreed. Rising tide lifts all boats to sea.
Look at you. You're such a poet.
All right. And this is the last question. And it's takes us into our give and go.
We are doing a give and go.
Again, this is from a listener, a lacrosse dad.
Didn't you have another question though? This is mailbag as well.
But this mailbag question is a give and go question.
Oh, wow.
Set up. This is from a loyalist. He says, it's a lacrosse dad. He has a 2.5-year-old daughter. And he says, what kids' songs used to get stuck in you and your wife's head, even when the kids weren't around and the songs weren't playing? And you got to think back a long time. So I'll start here. What kids' songs type of things? So my kids are only 8 and 6 years old. So I can do this a little more recently than you can. Obviously, that Baby Shark song, that would stick in my head. But my daughter, when she was 3 or something like that, so this is only 5 years ago, she loved when the Taylor Swift album came out with Shake It Off. She insisted on us playing that song all the time, especially whenever we got in the car. So I remember I used to count how far away something was by the number of times we would hear Shake It Off. So I said, oh, that's like a 9 Shake It Off song ride, or, oh, that's about 15 Shake It Offs away from here. And that's how annoying and prevalent that song was. Good tune, but my daughter may have ruined that one. I would say, I don't want to say sound like I'm super cool or anything like that, but I tried to get my kids to like real music, like classic rock music. So that's what we play in our house. I don't like to cater to my wife, though. She'll play Kids Bop. And there's this group called Kids Bop Dicks who covers popular songs with kid voices and kind of sugars them up. And I hate it. I don't know why you can't just listen to the Beatles sing the song or the original version of it. So there's a little bit of Kids Bop stuff that catchy tunes. And then the other thing is my daughter, we watched Frozen a zillion times. So a lot of those songs. And then in the last year or so, my family and my children especially fell in love with the musical Hamilton. So those songs were on all the time. And I found myself rapping Aaron Burr or Alexander Hamilton songs in my head all the time, even yesterday. So that's what we listened to. Do you remember those days?
I do. Children's songs. Good gravy. Baby Shark, obviously, is one that we'll be watching NFL Sundays. And DJ Chark, the wide receiver for the Jaguars. He was with the Jaguars. I don't know who he's with now, but we would sit there and be like, DJ Chark, DJ Chark. I mean, it's like, that's how bad the Baby Shark was. Yes, that was, Ted Lasso. Yeah. I'm trying to think. My kids were never really into, like, I guess they were into the Kidz Bop a little bit, but not much. I just remember when they were younger and they were in their car seats, I would make CDs. You know, my kids are older than yours, you know. I got a college, you know, soon to be college, rising college sophomore and a rising high school senior. But my son Owen loved the song Aisha by Another Bad Creation because there were kids singing it. And he'd be like, Dad, play the Kidz song. Play the Kidz song. Girl, yeah. And they were an offshoot of Belle Biv DeVoe, which was an offshoot of Boys to Men. Like in that lineage. So ABC.
Aren't those the kids who wear their clothes backwards?
No, that was Crisscross.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They make you want to jump. Make you jump. Yeah, no, Another Bad Creation. They were talking about, like, their rap was at the playground. They were trying to pick up chicks.
Of course they were.
Yeah. I know, and this is going to embarrass Matt, but I know Matt liked Justin Bieber back when he first came out.
Oh,
Matt
was like
9, 10 years old. But hey, look at, Bieber's like, you know, the guy's a bona fide, you know, superstar now.
Yeah, that's true.
Pop music. But Matt, we still give Matt a hard time about Justin Bieber. Or as he used to say, Justin Bieber. Trying to think of some other, the song Bad Day. You had a bad day. Because the kids used to watch American Idol. And that was a song on American Idol. So, I guess it's not necessarily kids' songs, but it's songs that you could play on the radio where you didn't have to find the edited version, you know, beeping out cuss words and all that other kind of stuff. So, yeah, I still have the CDs, I think. Obviously, there's nothing to play it on anymore. The girl, JoJo, she was like an English pop star. She had a couple of songs. I think they liked her. Danny Phantom. Remember the? I don't know if you remember the show Danny Phantom. The theme song for Danny Phantom.
Never heard of it.
That was a show. That was a cartoon. That was a pretty cool cartoon, actually. And the theme song for Danny Phantom was pretty cool. I used to, you know, sing that. That one used to run through my head a little bit. Those are a couple of them.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's like the theme songs to some of the shows the kids watch. Those do get stuck in your head. I remember that. Yeah. All right. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Thank you. It helps people find the podcast. Tell a friend, share the love. It's free to do so. And it's the least we can ask. Thanks, everybody, for a great season. I have enjoyed doing this with Dixie.
This is the wrap up one.
I mean, maybe we could do something in the summer.
We never.
I did text you and say, like, there's a couple of coaches I'd love to get on if they're willing to talk about a certain subject that I'd love to get them. So, but we love to hear from you. Just give us a shout out on Twitter. Thanks for the listener questions today. He's at Dixon Lacrosse. I'm simply at D_FLY. And remember, stay positive. Test negative. And as always, enjoy the games.
That's a wrap.